¡Vamos, amigos! Bringing that energy today, boys. What's going on? I'm your host, Duke. Let's go, friends. Vamos, amigos. You can find me on Twitter at DukeDFS, on Instagram at DukeDFS, and on Twitch at DukeDFS. And for those of you who saw me go live today's Wednesday, for the first time, a little bit of an audio issue. Thank you and apologies for those who stopped by. There was a bit of an echo. We've fixed that, and we are accepting bits moving forward. Donations. We're going to do a little bit of soccer content over there. We might play some FIFA. We'll certainly be talking some DFS and some betting stuff, which is the point of this podcast. Welcome to the Talking Soccer Podcast. Boy, oh boy, have we had a good 7 days at the Elite Mafia. This weekend especially, we smashed, but then Champions League as well. Absolutely hammered the core four on Tuesday and Wednesday. And here's the plan for today's podcast. Number one, I'm going to tell you where you can find all my work. We're going to go through the whole ad thing so you can subscribe. You can make money. I can make money. We'll help each other out. This is a good thing. Number two, we'll talk about Champions League and the madness that's happened over the last 2 days. Quite honestly, that'll be the bulk of this episode. And then number three, we'll recap briefly last weekend's EPL slate and then go through this weekend's games. And then number four, we'll head to Mexican and grab some margaritas. You guys in? Vamos! So, where can you find me? I just mentioned on Twitter, Instagram, and on Twitch. Now, that's where you can find me talking about me stuff and some soccer stuff and some football stuff. But all my work for DFS is on elitefantasy.com. All my sports betting, which we hit two bets today, Chelsea to win and the over on elitesportsbetting.com. And of course, if you're into this long fantasy season stuff, fantasy football, fantasy baseball, we may throw some soccer in there next year. Who knows? Fantasyguru.com. So check all those out if you haven't already. If you are, thanks so much for subscribing and supporting us. We love you guys. Okay, number two. We're on to number two already. 204, Champions League. It's the best, man. It's absolutely the best. But for maybe some reasons that you might not be expecting. So think about this. Surely you grew up with that one douchebag who was always just bigger than everybody else, right? Just that huge kid, the one who's always been big. He was always the best, but just basically due to his size, never had to really hone in his skill level or her skill level. And, you know, they couldn't quite reach their potential, their peak, because they weren't being pushed to excel. We see a little bit of that in the Champions League. But in truth, I want to focus on the positive side of that, not the negative, not the fact that, you know, that former big kid who was the best is now, you know, stopped growing in like seventh grade. He's just a 5'10 fat kid who pumped your gas. Let's not focus on that piece. Let's focus on the positive side. And we saw it today on Wednesday. We saw continuous improvement out of these average teams that come into the Champions League every single year. We think about a Red Bull Salzburg. They're the perfect example. Today, they lost 4-3 to Liverpool at Anfield. It's a loss. Do you think they'll be helped long-term by this loss? 1,000%. Just look at the emotion we saw from them today, from this squad, from this manager. They were down 3-0 on the road in their second game in the Champions League. Not expected to win. And hell, first week, they hammered Genk 6-2. This is the perfect opportunity for them just to fold, to give up, to say, we didn't get it done today, boys. Let's save our energy, head back, do our damage in the league, and come back for game week three. We weren't going to win this game anyway. But no, they battled back. And they nearly pulled off a result. The best result in the history of the club. Hell, this 4-3 loss may have been the best result in the history of the club. Liverpool up 3-0. Salzburg come back. Score a goal, 3-1. Score another goal, 3-2. Bring on the 19-year-old who looks like an absolute player. Haaland taps in a goal. He's so big. 6'3", looks like he's 6'9". Taps in a goal. It's 3-3. You see the manager sprinting down the sideline. Jesse Marsh, an American, by the way, coaching in Europe, sprinting down the sideline, hugs his players, hugs his team. The raw emotion. Sure enough, Liverpool comes back, scores a goal, takes the win. But after the game, all the players clapping their away fans. Progress, right? Progress. They have that level that they're trying to get to. They're being pushed in the Champions League. Salzburg will grow from this. And long term, it helps international football if these smaller teams are getting better. Let's not think about the guy pumping gas. Let's think about who this is helping. Jesse Marsh, I see a lot of people on Twitter today saying, oh, future coach of the U.S. men's national team. How arrogant do you have to be to think Jesse Marsh, who nearly pulled off the result of his career, regardless of where he goes from here, potentially, would just jump at the chance to coach the U.S. men's national team? He's going to have offers if this continues. Let me preface. If this continues, he's going to have offers lining his desk for his next job. And shout out to Red Bull for the long-term vision that they have as an organization, right? Sometimes on the Talking Soccer podcast, we talk about issues, Tottenham being one of them, and we'll get to them here later today. Institutional club issues that permeate from the academy through the top. We think about an organization like Red Bull, an energy drink taking over teams in football. What are their true intentions? Is this a marketing scheme? They have a team in America, New York Red Bulls. They have a team in Germany. And then they have Red Bull Salzburg. Jesse Marsh coaching the team in America. They pull him away from that team, bring in a new manager, send him over to Europe as an assistant coach first, and then say, you know what, this year, take over. You're going to Salzburg. Take over these guys. Let's give you the opportunity. They put a plan in place. They had a long-term. And by the way, this isn't just for players, for coaches, for managers. A long-term plan for his development. And it's showing, it's bearing fruit, right? The roots are planted. He's done the work. Red Bull's done the work. And we're seeing the results. Didn't get the win today, but long-term, what a huge, huge effort from Red Bull Salzburg. Now, how about Barcelona? Pulled off a massive win today against Inter. Wasn't looking good for a while. Did they have their mojo back? Does Barca have their mojo back? No, they don't. But they got their goat back, Messi. He's like the 48-ounce ribeye that you show up for, you go to the steakhouse for. But today, Luis Suarez was that $100 bottle of wine that you just thought was going to be good. Absolutely pulls the meal together. He's that thing you'll be talking about when you leave. Scored two goals. They beat Inter 2-1. Suarez's first goal was so good. So good. The strike was unbelievable. Don't get me wrong. Full volley, about 3 yards off the ground, you know, pivots, hits it right in the sweet spot, far corner. But his movement to get that space was what really impressed me. Defenders, he checks in, they drop off. He has that space. He's calling for the ball. He knows not to just run into towards the goal. He evaluates situation, uses his experience, uses his football brain. Says, I'm going to stay right here, just a couple yards off the penalty spot, and the ball will find me, and I'm going to bury it. Sure enough, bang, they're back in the game, 1-1. And then his second goal was almost better. Messi does the hard work. And if you go back and watch the replay, part of the reason why Messi is the GOAT is the sheer number, the volume of players that surround him when he has the ball. And if you go back and watch this replay, especially on the end-to-end look from behind the goal, you'll see 3 to 4 Inter players collapse on Messi. Sure enough, even though he's been left-footed his entire life, does the little stop, stutter, drag back, plays the ball across to Suarez, who intelligently lets the ball run across his body, takes a longer touch, purposefully, longer touch to escape Godin, who was pressuring him, goes in, and if you didn't see it, I was cracking up because Luis Suarez was smiling before he struck the ball. That's the look of a confident forward. And that confidence came from his first strike. And then that first touch. And then going, the hard bit's done. Let's bury this. Kiss his three fingers. Those crazy teeth. He could chew corn through a fence with those chompers. Job done. 2-1. That slight little feint. The longer first touch. The calm finish. I never roster Suarez in Champions League. I just don't. He's too old. He's not involved enough. He's all or nothing. He's Cavani, basically, but on potentially a better team. So I don't usually roster him, but man, it was good to see Barcelona get the groove back a little bit. Now, P.S. I hate Antonio Conte. I just don't like him. I don't like the way he plays football. I don't like the way he organizes his team. Today, he was annoying the shit out of everyone. Alexis Sanchez got a yellow card off the bench because they're complaining about God knows what. Antonio Conte gets a yellow card, nearly sent off. Don't like him. But I realized this today, and I've seen Conte, obviously, for years. And, you know, he has fake hair. You didn't know that? You didn't know he had fake hair? Go Google Antonio Conte in his last years, his playing years. Hilariously bad hair. Great hair now. But that's what got me thinking. Has anyone ever seen Antonio Conte and Keith Urban in the same room together? He's a little bit tanner, right? He's got that Italian skin. Similar hair, similar facial structure. I don't know. I've never seen it. Have you? I don't know. We're getting off track here. Let's talk about Chelsea. Nope. Let's not talk about Chelsea. I want to save them for the end for one very specific and one very American reason. So hang tight on them. Other action today, Zenit and Benfica had all the makings of being an absolute snooze fest. Ended up 3-1. I love you, Champions League. Dortmund picked up a good win on the road in the Czech Republic. Julian Brandt, who was like Hitler's perfect youth, right? Tall, blonde hair, blue eyes. Not a big Hitler podcast. We don't like him, but he's a hell of a player. He's just absolute class on the ball. Not overly fast, but has that long, languid stride. First touch, always where it needs to be. He looked good today, but Hakimi stole the show. Two goals. He probably overlooked the inefficiency of Jadon Sancho. And if you didn't see it in the second half, right at the start of the second half almost, Jadon Sancho breaks through one-on-one with the goalie, but he's got literally 50 yards or so to run to get to the end line. Like a under 10 rec player on his second or third touch just hits it far too far. Goalie comes out, easily collects it. Sancho runs in, try to challenge him. Look, he's quality. Sancho's good. He's quality. But let's pump the brakes a little bit on putting him up with the top wingers in the world, okay? This is such an English thing to do. You got a young guy who breaks through the next best thing. Rashford. Sancho. What about Gnabry? I know he's German, but we'll talk about him here in just a minute. Other action from today. Ajax absolutely murdered Valencia on the road in a game that really set up well for us from a DFS perspective. For starters, Ziyech was the first name on my team sheet. He was in the core four, and that turned out to be A-OK. Unbelievable goal. First goal of the slate, actually. But let me read my write-up for this game, if I can find it. Let's see here. Valencia-Ajax. Valencia are conservative, and Ajax are balls to the wall. I love the clash of styles that the Champions League brings us every year. This game is a perfect example of the many different ways to be effective in football. I have to admit, the Valencia win over Chelsea came out of left field for me. They weren't playing well, have just sacked their manager, and overall looked to be in shambles. They put together a hell of a performance and have since gone on to pick up two draws and a win in La Liga. Not bad, not bad. Now, Ajax are buzzing. After beating Lille 3-0, they tied PSV 1-1 in a battle for the top of the Eredivisie. Since then, it's been a 5-0 and 2-0 win. For all the plaudits of the Ajax attack, their defense is a bit underrated even after the loss of De Ligt. And that's what I want to focus on here today. Big win, 3-0 on the road to Valencia. Obviously, goals from Ziyech, I believe Quincy Promes, and Van de Beek. The three superstars in the attack. Dusan Tadic, where have you gone? But how about that back line? To keep a clean sheet on the road? Again, Valencia is not world beaters, right? They're in shambles, as I mentioned in the write-up. But this is a sneaky team that can go super far in the Champions League. I think they'll get out of the group relatively easily, potentially in the top spot. But with the loss of Frankie de Jong and Matthias de Ligt, how many of you, and maybe myself included, said, that's a lot for Ajax. That's a lot for Ajax. Now, they held on to Neres. They held on to Ziyech. They held on to Van de Beek. But they lost two super studs and just filled the gaps like nothing's ever happened. Again, we talk about overall club structure, having a plan from academy to the first team. Ajax. A perfect example of this. And I look at one player in particular, Hakim Ziyech, and I saw several people, Stu Holden even said it, on the coverage for Bleacher Report on TNT. How is Ziyech still at Ajax? For me, it's because he's set up for success. I mean, just think about what he's done in his short-term career at Ajax. Granted, hell of a player. He's one of the top wingers in the world. But his style of play fits a few systems. Not all systems. Not everyone can afford to have a Ziyech. And let's think about Chelsea here. This is where we can tie them back in. I simply turn to Christian Pulisic. You know, Pulisic, he moved to Chelsea for $73.1 million. That's a lot of money. He's not some schlub. He's one of the most expensive players on the planet. Moves to Chelsea, granted, under a different manager. But that's what happens sometimes. The grass isn't always greener. So here you have Hakim Ziyech. And this is what he said about a transfer away from Ajax. I'm quoting him here. Every player has to make their own decision. But I have always said, overall picture has to be right. If I didn't have the perfect feeling, then I'd rather stay. Because here, I experience football the way I like it played. Making a transfer has never been a sacred goal. Do you think Christian Pulisic would agree with that now? He didn't even make the bench for this Champions League game. These are crucial development years for him and for the U.S. He needs games. Look, it wasn't working out at Dortmund, right? Jadon Sancho has taken his spot. He was playing some, but not enough. So maybe he needed to move. And this isn't a perfect apples-to-apples example because Ziyech is on the first team sheet every single game. Pulisic wasn't playing every game. So it's not apples-to-apples. But a move away to a team with guaranteed playing time, that was a must. Moving to Chelsea, having a manager leave, and now finding yourself outside the 18, let alone the first 11, not ideal. Quote unquote, bigger teams are not always better. I think about, you know, obviously this is an American issue. Christian Pulisic, he's our savior. He's baby Jesus. We need him to play. We, you know, he's got to help us get to that next level. I think about for English fans, a player like Jack Rodwell. He was the next big thing in the midfield. I think playing for Southampton, if I'm correct, I might be wrong there. Unbelievable player, getting caps for England. The future of England, playing very well. Young, athletic, big, strong, a terrier on the pitch. Moves to Man City, never plays. Yeah, he did get some injuries, but even when he was healthy and I wasn't playing, totally derailed the career of a young player, a teenager, destined for big things. So the grass isn't always greener. So why is Ziyech still at Ajax? Because he's set up for success. And perhaps we can all learn a thing or two from Hakim Ziyech. Now, how about Tuesday's Champions League slate? There's two teams that really we need to talk about. Real Madrid and Tottenham. Real Madrid, they tied Club Brugge. Club Brugge, go look them up, 2-2. And they were down 2-0 at one point. Look, yes, they outshot Brugge 27-7. Yes, they had 73% possession. Yes, they had 14 corner kicks. But that's not the point, man. They needed to sub off their goalie. Halftime. They had goals from their center back and their CDM to tie Club Brugge. They needed to be a man up to equalize after a red card from Brugge. I've never seen a goalie subbed off at halftime. Hilarious. And boy, oh boy, do I feel vindicated in never rating Courtois. Look, ever since he's left Atletico, it's been downhill for him. And that was two teams ago. And shame on Madrid for running off Keylor Navas, who brought him, what, 2-3 Champions League titles for the next best thing. We were just talking about Ziyech, not leaving Ajax, for the grass is always greener. Why in the hell? They have Keylor Navas. Why are they tapping up David De Gea? Why are they kicking out Navas for Courtois? Screw you, man. Madrid, you're Galacticos. Why are you needing to eke out a draw against Club Brugge? Zidane isn't waving this magic wand and willing results. But look, facts are facts. This is Madrid. The Galacticos. Ronaldo, old and new. Figo, Raul, Zidane. They didn't will results. They made their opponents bend the knee. And they're a long way from those days. And the only reason this isn't a bigger story for Madrid, and it is in Spain, obviously, but across the world, is because Tottenham also played on Tuesday. Seven, dude. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 goals conceded. including four to Serge Gnabry, who we'll talk about here in a second. But first of all, I think Pochettino handled the press conference as well as he could have. He basically said, what can you say? We got hammered. We'll move on and we'll fix things. Look, this isn't the time for the hairdryer to go in and hammer your players. But for me, it sure looked like they quit on him. And that's not good as a manager. They started brightly. They were on top. So you got to say, all right, well, the team talk must have been fine. The warm-up must have been fine. They were up two Manuel Neuer saves away from being up 2-3-0 in the first 10 minutes. Early goal by Son gave him a 1-0 lead, but then it was all downhill from there on a sled with a rocket launcher on the back. And here's the worrying part for me too. And I talk about quitting on Pochettino. The quick nature of the goals, one right after the other, is where it shows me that the players just mentally weren't there. And granted, the game was gone at the end of this, but listen to this. 53rd minute, goal, Gnabry. 55th minute, goal, Gnabry. 2 minutes in between goals. That means a player scores, head drops, focus drops, intensity drops. 2 minutes later, a goal scored. Then later in the game, 83rd minute. And they're not chasing the game, by the way. The game was done at this point. They weren't chasing the game. 83rd minute, goal, Gnabry. 87th minute, goal, Lewandowski. 88th minute, goal, Gnabry. These players are quitting on Pochettino. And I did a whole rant on Tottenham last week, so I'm not going to do it again. You know exactly how I feel about this. If you haven't listened yet, go check it out on the Guru Elite Podcast Network on iTunes, or you can certainly go to elitefantasy.com and under the More tab, click Soccer, and then Soccer Podcasts. Something stinks in North London. And I don't know that Levy's going to make a move mid-season, but this has to be the last year for Pochettino at Tottenham. And quite honestly, with this form, they're keeping everyone in this top four race. And they're in danger of not getting out of this group in the Champions League. Tottenham not in a good place. And speaking of development and Gnabry, development's a key piece here. Because we mentioned Pulisic not playing, right? But reminder, Serge Gnabry, who scored four goals against Tottenham on the road, he was deemed not ready for Arsenal. Didn't play. Shipped out on loan to West Brom. Played some at West Brom, but then deemed he wasn't good enough for West Brom. Wasn't up to the standard. Sent back to Arsenal without a permanent bid for West Brom. And then finally, he sold on a cut-rate deal to Bayern just 2 years later. 2 to 3 years later. He's bagging four goals against Tottenham in the Champions League. Does this sound familiar to you at all? Because it happens all the time. Kevin De Bruyne, maybe the best midfielder in the world. He was sold by Chelsea. Mo Salah, sold by Chelsea. Now, granted, same manager. Jose Mourinho, the special one. Selling two of the best players in the world. Donkey. Gnabry was loaned out, then sold. Players develop at different rates. Think about Rashford and all the shit he's going through right now. We give these players so much respect for contributing at an early age, but then we just assume that the ascension is going to continue. We need to remember they're still kids. They're going to be inconsistent. And football, more than most sports, is reliant on form. It's kind of a bit like golf, right? For anybody that's played golf or is a golfer out there, surely you've had that round where everything's just going well for you. You're playing over your skis. Every drive's down the middle. Every putt goes in. Every chip is hit clean. And you're thinking to yourself, this is awesome. I'm good at this. I'm confident. I can do this. And then the next round, you go out, and for no reason, with no explanation, you're in the woods chasing balls left and right and ready to give up the sport. That's football as well. There's times when everything you do is working. You're kind of going, oh, shoot, I didn't mean to do that, but that worked out well. And this player accidentally stepped here, and the ball went through there, and now I look like a genius with great vision, but it really was just a bad touch. That's how it is with football. And sometimes form can fall out for a week, sometimes a month, or sometimes a year. But especially with these young kids, we got to let them develop. We got to give them time to develop. If they need a loan move away, fine. But when they're this good, when their potential is that high, why do you sell players like that? I've never understood it. And when I'm running a football club, I won't. So sign me up. You can find me at Duke DFS on Twitter. Last but not least, for Tottenham, Vertonghen, oh my God, old and slow. Old and slow. Just, he can't do it anymore. And maybe that's why Pochettino had him outside the 18 at the start of the year. It was a curious move for me, but I'm still thinking back to last year, Champions League final and the whole run-up for Vertonghen playing well. He's getting old and slow in a hurry. And Hugo Lloris, what can we say? But absolutely out of form, not looking good at all. And then we think about Toby Alderweireld. Why did no one activate his release clause this summer? It was like £25 million for starting center back on the Champions League finalist. Why is no one playing that? Maybe they know something too. Shit's rotten in North London. They need to figure it out fast. Now, how would I fix it? I would pick my first 11. I would tell them, you guys are going to play us out of this mess. You're going to play every single game until your legs fall off or we figure it out or I'm fired. And I'm going to trust my best players and we're going to go get out of this slump. And to me, here's their best lineup. Harry Kane up front all by himself. Off the left, Heung-Min Son. Off the right, Lucas Moura. Eriksen playing in the number 10 role where he's meant to be through the middle. Sissoko and Ndombele patrolling the middle. Letting Eriksen do his thing, they'll take care of the defensive responsibility. Ndombele needs to get forward a little bit, fine, but I really want to shore up these center backs who I don't think really have it anymore. Now, off the left back, Danny Rose, through the middle, the best pairing has to be Davinson Sanchez and Toby Alderweireld. And quite frankly, when Juan Foyth is healthy, perhaps Alderweireld leaves the field as well, and it's just Sanchez and Foyth. Off the right, Kyle Walker-Peters. Serge Aurier, God bless you. You try hard. You are a lunatic, man. I don't know that I could trust him long-term. And then we all just got to pray that Hugo Lloris finds his form because Gazzaniga ain't it, man. And Lloris is shit, but we got to hope he finds his form. Remember, he's a World Cup champion. It's in there somewhere. Play a 4-2-3-1, solid at the back, dangerous going forward. And they'll need it this weekend because they're just slight favorites over Brighton Hove Albion in the early game on Saturday, 7:30 a.m., -115 favorites on the road. So speaking of which, let's talk about a little EPL. Big results from last weekend before we get to this weekend, and we leave you with a little bit of DFS action and one bet for this weekend. Big results from last weekend. Crystal Palace, very impressive with their win over Norwich. I'm officially pumping the brakes on my Norwich love. They are fun, but they are also not good. You can be both, all right? It's like a little puppy who shits everywhere. You love him. He's so cute, but Jesus, there's a lot coming out of the back end of that smile. And that's kind of how Norwich is. Decent going forward, but if they're not scoring goals and they're conceding like this, they'll be back down in the championship next year. Now, how about Man City? Looked super good over Everton. We know Everton are terrible. I don't know if we can hold this result against them, but a 3-1 win by City over Everton on the road there. Liverpool, quote-unquote, gutted one out against Sheffield. But in truth, they could have been four or more. Sadio Mane in particular, very wasteful in front of goal. Lost me some money on that, you shithead. Anyway, Leicester upped their case for the top four with a 5-0 hammering of Newcastle at home. Kind of the forgotten game, just a one-game Sunday slate there. Then, of course, on Monday, Man United and Arsenal played into quite possibly the most boring 1-1 draw in the history of their existence. But let's talk about this weekend. DraftKings has a 5-game slate for us. They actually included that 12:30 game with West Ham and Crystal Palace. I'm guessing because the rest of this slate outside of Liverpool-Leicester is kind of shitty. Obviously, Liverpool-Leicester, the game of the weekend. At home, Liverpool -220 favorites hosting Leicester. We'll talk about that here in just a second. But to run through Vegas quickly, Burnley hosting Everton, +190 for Burnley, +155. Everton slight favorites there on the road, a 2.5 total with some juice, -145 on the under. Norwich hosting Aston Villa in a true six-pointer. And for those of you who don't know what a six-pointer is, I'll likely say that, especially as we get further along in the season. It's when two teams are going to finish relatively close to each other in the table, and the result of this game, a win for either team, will separate them by 6 points. So, in truth, every game's a six-pointer. If someone wins and someone loses, you know, you could, you know, essentially create that gap there. But especially towards the bottom of the table, when points are so critical, Aston Villa and Norwich likely to be in this relegation battle, if not both relegated by the end of the season. A big win here by Aston Villa would parachute them out of the relegation zone. And, of course, Norwich teetering right there in 17th on the edge of relegation. That would be a huge loss for them. So super excited to see what happens in that game. Watford, plus 115 home favorites, even though they're bottom of the table, sitting with just 2 points through six games, hosting Sheffield, who are plus 250. 2.5 total there, even juice on the under, minus 120. Then the late game, 12:30, West Ham, even money, Crystal Palace, plus 280 on the road. Total sitting at 2.5, minus 105 on the over, minus 115 on the under. Now, two games with three totals, Liverpool-Leicester. Liverpool, the biggest favorite on the slate, minus 220. Second highest total. Surely, ownership will fall towards the big players with Liverpool. Now, I'm a little worried about that, not because they aren't good plays, but because they're expensive and they just had a hell of a battle against Salzburg in Champions League today, Wednesday, and they have to play 3 days later in a top four contest. Honestly, Leicester firmly in the conversation, sitting in third with 14 points at the moment, hammering Newcastle 5-0, and Liverpool having this big test, especially after being up 3-0 in cruising and thinking about what they're going to do tonight. I'm going to be out at halftime. You know, I can chill out, maybe get, you know, 60, 50 minutes in for my legs, rest up for the weekend. No, no, no. Several key players playing the full 90 absolutely throttled them fitness-wise. So I'm interested to see what happens here. I'll be grabbing some shares of Leicester from a DFS perspective. Madison's not a terrible price. Roberto Pereira has been incredibly consistent. And how about Jamie Vardy? I just saw a stat. Quicker to 85 goals in the Premier League than Cristiano Ronaldo. Is Jamie Vardy the best player in the world? No, not at all. Not at all. Don't even joke about that. All right. So, Everton, Burnley. Let's talk about that game. Burnley at home. Everton looking like trash. Again, they lost to City last week. Can't really hold that against them. More worried about previous weeks. Marco Silva's got to be on the hot seat. Has to be. And this is not a good matchup for someone who has to be on the hot seat. Slight favorites, even though they're plus 155. Burnley at home is a tough out for anybody. They're essentially Sheffield, who's been around longer, right? Organized long ball, organized on set pieces, organized from open play. Low total, minus 145 juice on under 2.5, the lowest total on the board. Obviously going to be in an absolute battle. Will I grab some pieces here from a DFS perspective? Likely not. And again, we'll obviously go through in detail in-game breakdowns for each of these games in my article on elitefantasy.com. We'll talk in-depth about particular plays for cash and GPP perspectives on elitefantasy.com. But just a quick overview here for these games. I do want to give you a little bit. Leicester, I think they're top four team. We talked about the demise of Tottenham going on right now. Leicester sitting on 14 points through six games, just behind the top two. And when we talk about form, they're right there. Who's playing better than Leicester right now outside of the top two? I can't think of anybody. West Ham's coming on, but are they as good as Leicester? No, I don't think so. And they have quality players throughout. I was a little worried about them defensively once Harry Maguire left. They filled the gaps nicely, looking good. Norwich Villa, like we said, six-pointer. Definitely grab some pieces of this game. This game can go one of two ways because it's so critical that these teams get points. For Norwich, it's a home game. They need points from home games, so they have to minimum get a point, but they need 3 points from this game. So they will be attacking. We know in general Norwich will attack. Aston Villa, let's say they go down a goal early. They need a point as well. A point here would be mint. They'd still be in the relegation zone, but they wouldn't drop as long as Newcastle and Watford hold court. Now, Watford can't catch them anyway. If Aston Villa draw, they'll be on 6 points, and Watford will not be able to catch them, so they'll be in, 19th, 18th? But more importantly than where they are on the table today, against these bottom half teams, they need to get results. That's where they're going to make their hay. They're not going to beat Liverpool or Chelsea or someone like that. They need to get their points from these games. Let's assume Norwich scores a goal early. Aston Villa aren't going to bunker, but they're going to keep it close. And then later and later into the game, as Norwich continue to press and play and keep the ball, Villa are going to have to come out and play further and more expansive football. I think this game could easily have three goals in it. Easily have four goals in it. This could be a 3-2 type of game. So will I get here in cash in many instances? We'll see. Again, I'll go into this more in my article on elitefantasy.com. But from a GPP perspective, especially knowing Liverpool just came off a draining win in Champions League, I like this game to shoot out. More than any other game on the slate. Liverpool, Leicester, obviously the most talent on the slate from one game. But as far as fireworks, GPP, lower price potential, I like this game more than anything else on the slate. Now, Watford, Sheffield, throw it in the trash can. Throw it in the trash can. Sheffield, not necessarily a dynamic team, and they're on the road. Watford, stink. Need points. This is a game I want to break down more in depth in the article. Go check that out. The afternoon hammer, West Ham, Crystal Palace. I like West Ham now. Crystal Palace looked great last weekend. Big 2-0 win. But West Ham, even money, home favorites, 2.5 total, slight juice on the over. I'll be grabbing some pieces of West Ham. So let's go through just a couple of plays. We'll give you one bet. We'll get you out of here for DFS. Just a couple of prices that caught my eye. Okay, so when we think about Liverpool, I mean, the top plays are obvious. Mo Salah is going to be good. Sadio Mane is going to be good. Don't think it's a Firmino week, but James Maddison going to be good. What about the other plays? Timu Pukki, I just mentioned why. At 8,500 for me is a perfect GPP play. May sneak into cash. We'll see. Sebastian Haller, 7,800. Another perfect example. Home favorite, decent total. Most likely to score a goal, under 8K. Love it. Move down to the midfield. Luka Milivojevic, 6.6K for this guy. Granted, he's on the road. He's a slight dog. But he takes penalties. He takes set pieces. He scored from open play already this year. He should be 7.6, not 6.6, especially on a relatively short five-game slate. Aaron Cresswell and really Masuaku, whoever plays left back for West Ham, I have interest in as well. Cresswell, 5,100. The spend up for me, of all spend ups, of all positions, is Trent Alexander-Arnold, assuming he plays, right? 6.8K, averaging 17.79 DraftKings points. He's essentially good for 2X with the potential for 3X. Defenders rarely come off in game, so we want to get 90 minutes out of our expensive players. Decent little spend up there from a defensive point of view. Last but not least, at goalkeeper, I really like Dean Henderson. I know we don't usually talk goalkeepers here on the Talking Soccer podcast, but a little treat for you. Dean Henderson stood out for me with his price of 4,400 in a matchup against Watford. Watford just simply haven't got it going moving forward, going forward. I think the win equity's there. I think the clean sheet equity's definitely there. And most importantly, perhaps from a goalie perspective, the absolute blow up minus 6 point game isn't there. I can't see Watford really hammering Sheffield United, even at home, as a slight favorite. So those are just a couple games. Six names that I gave off here of players that I'm looking at that aren't the obvious ones. So go ahead and check those out. If you want to learn more about DFS and some of the guys I'm recommending and why, go check out my article on elitefantasy.com. Now, how about one bet for the weekend? If you've listened to me thus far, thanks so much for checking out this Talking Soccer podcast. Subscribe, rate, review, do the whole nine. If you just open the podcast and skip till here, I still love you. Do the same thing. One bet to get you out. And I actually like about six different bets throughout the weekend. Let's go first thing Saturday morning. You guys know I like to give you the Friday bet. Or the first thing Saturday bet, so you have a little extra change in your pocket to hit this main slate, play some more DFS, bet some more games. I love Tottenham in this spot. Minus 115. Really, in truth, they should be about, what, minus 200? Even on the road, Brighton. This, to me, this is more about Brighton and the talent gap between these teams than the form of anybody. I know I just gave this big speech about form, but this is simply a talent play. Tottenham minus 115. In the absolute doldrums of their existence, seemingly, will come out and get the victory. There it is. Grab you a little extra money before college football starts. Throw it down on the Buckeyes. Minus 18 against Michigan State. And all right, kids. That's going to do it for this week's Talking Soccer podcast. I love you guys. Adios.